Devi Kanandan is speaking on the pastime of Bali Maharaj, yes?
Yes.
At the temple. So, with that in mind, I thought I would speak one verse from that whole section, and then speak about a little bit about Bali Maharaj's 100 sons, or the chief of Bali Maharaj's 100 sons, Bana. We heard this morning about Palastyamuni. See you later. Go, Govinda. Much, much later. He really liked kirtan, though. Palastya, we heard, was the progenitor of many demons, but not all demons, of the wives of Kashyapa. Diti had some responsibility also, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. And descendants from Hiranyakashipu include great devotees as his son Prahlad and as the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj is Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj as the king of the Daityas was extremely powerful, so powerful that he defeated just exactly what Indra was afraid might ever happen. It happened. He invaded with his military and defeated defeated Indra and all the demigods and took over the kingdom of heaven. And the whole story, you know, the Shukracharya was the priest of the Daityas, and under his direction different yajnas were being performed. And Vamana, at the request of Indra, appeared to check Bali Maharaj. The very interesting description of in Brihat Bhagavatamrita when Narada goes to Indraloka and he sees that Indra is so fortunate that his younger brother Vamana stays with Indra and Indra worships him daily. And Narada exclaims, how fortunate. You worship the personality of Godhead in person every day. You are surely the most fortunate person in the whole of the universe. He says, no. Yes, he appeared as my younger brother, but it was just an embarrassment. He appeared like a little dwarf. Because I couldn't stop Bali Maharaj, he appeared as a little dwarf just to embarrass me and defeated him. It gives so many other reasons why he's not at all the most fortunate person. Well, Balli Maharaj went against the instruction of Shukracharya, disobeying the order of his spiritual master, because he followed Vedic authority. Vedic authority says a spiritual master must give instruction to surrender unto the lotus feet of Vishnu. And Shukracharya was saying, he's Vishnu and don't surrender to him. Directly against the scripture. So I can't accept what you say. He was actually a great devotee. And seeing, being in the presence of Vamana, take whatever you like. So after he took not only whatever he liked, but at the end of the 21st chapter, he blasts him and says, you made me a promise. You're a king. You gave me a promise, 3 paces of land. And you only gave me 2 pieces of land. Mm-hmm. You broke your promise. I'm going to have to punish you. So besides the punishment of placing his foot on his head, he tied him up in ropes, like indicating like a common criminal. Powerful king. And he just took it. He just let himself be tied up. He was so powerful. But after surrendering everything, Atmani Vedana, you know, he gave everything. Tied him up. And following that, a whole group of personalities came and debated whether that was the right thing or not. Some said he was the right thing. Some said this was really bad. He surrendered everything and now he's punishing him. Even Prahlad Maharaj came, his grandfather, said, oh, this is very good. This is very good. He gave his various reasons why it's very good. And after hearing everybody give their different opinion, Balli Maharaj then gave his opinion. Excuse me, Vamana gave his opinion. And he's expressing, I'm going to read the verse, where he's expressing what he wanted to do was multiple things, because the Lord is expert with one thing, he does multiple things. Not multitasking. while chanting, he's reading the Bhagavatam, and he's also planning out his homework assignment, and thinking about what he should have said yesterday to somebody, and etc. Not like that. But by one thing, he's accomplishing many things. So he restored the kingdom of Indra back to Indra. He took from Balli Maharaj all other of the normal shelters that people have, and as like Hari, he took them until he had only one shelter remaining, and that was himself, and he maintained that position throughout. So Vamana wanted to show the world, just see, this person is the most exalted devotee amongst all devotees. And then he's explaining why. Balli Maharaj has become the most famous amongst the demons and non-believers, for in spite of being bereft of all material opulences, he is fixed in his devotional service. Although bereft of his riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, although suffering the pain of being bound, And although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Bali Maharaj, being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. It was certainly with pretension that I spoke about religious principles, but he did not give up religious principles, for he is true to his word. If we sometimes have some problem, think about Bali Maharaj. You got it easy, or we have it easy. The challenges that he faced were so extreme, so radical. It's something like what Bhishma Dev said to the Pandavas and Kunti. Normal person couldn't survive the difficulties that you've had to endure. And what was it that they were, what was the cause of their enduring the difficulties? Their steadfast position of devotion to the personality of Godhead. They could have something, compromised, something. But they just stayed in fidelity with the personality of Godhead. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Bali Maharaj passed the severe test put before him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is further proof of the Lord's mercy toward his devotee. The Supreme Personality of Godhead sometimes puts a devotee through severe tests that are almost unbearable. One could hardly even live under the conditions forced upon Bali Maharaj. That Bali Maharaj endured all these severe tests and austerities is the mercy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord certainly appreciates the devotee's forbearance, and it is recorded for the future glorification of the devotee. This was not an ordinary test. As described in this verse, hardly anyone could survive such a test, but for the future glorification of Bali Maharaj, one of the Mahajans, the Supreme Personality of God had not only tested him, but also gave him the strength to tolerate such adversity. That's the key sentence in the whole purport. The Lord is so kind to his devotee that when severely testing him, the Lord gives him the necessary strength to be tolerant and continue to remain a glorious devotee. Prabhupada sometimes said that Krishna never gives his devotee a challenge more difficult than they can fulfill, or some service more difficult than they can fulfill, like Arjuna seeing the odds before him, not realistic that the Pandavas would be successful. But because Krishna and Arjuna were on the same side, they were successful. And when adversity comes, sometimes it certainly feels like and looks like it's too much. It's overwhelming. Some circumstances appear like that. But for some devotee that's very steadfast, Krishna gives a more significant test so that the devotee takes exclusive shelter of him and his extra mercy is exhibited by Krishna giving the strength. Here he's using the word forbearance. So that the devotee, through that strength and forbearance, can endure the difficulty and come out on the other side. Trying to remember where I heard this. It might have been by Sheshika Prabhu. I can't remember. or Badri Narayan or somebody, I can't remember. He was telling, they were telling a story of Prabhupada investing confidence and courage and transcendental strength to his devotees, disciples. This is that verse, the secret to success is having implicit faith in the instructions of the spiritual master. You know that from your ever well-wisher, when that professor is speaking about the devotees doing the impossible, and he said, you know, one of them came and said that my spiritual master has asked me to start a magazine. And I asked him, what do you know about magazines? And he said, I've only read them. And that, you know, what it's involved in publishing a magazine is very complicated. But the devotee has such confidence and courage. It was, there's no question about it. Mission Impossible, no problem. And because of that confidence and courage, it became accomplished. And then he said, then I went to New York and I met the Swamiji, and then I could understand where that courage came from. When I was still in college, I was staying in a house where there were a number of people doing different types of spiritual practices. And of those people in that house where I was staying, three of them went with one other devotee from the Buffalo Temple. Janame Joya went with Taradasi and Bhakta Paul, and it was Paul and Jennifer, boyfriend, girlfriend. And off they went to Atlanta with nothing other than a mission from Prabhupada to start a Hare Krishna temple in Atlanta, because there wasn't one. And I know what three of those four people were practicing, and you know, they were chanting Hare Krishna, but they weren't like fixed devotees or anything at all. And then they went with nothing, and they found a place near Emory University, and they found somebody, William Ogle, to stay with, and later he became Balavanta, who became the temple president and the GBC and ran for mayor for Atlanta under the banner of In God We Trust Party. Just with full confidence that Prabhupada had requested one to do this. I can, you know, so many stories of devotees being so, just by being in Prabhupada's association, being so confident that something that's impossible, they did it. And with like he describes in Nectar of Instruction, ready to accept any hardship or austerity, that didn't matter, to carry out the instruction of the spiritual master. I'll just say two more. One of them is Guru Gauranga Prabhu. Guru Gauranga went to college around the same time as Devamrita Swami, who was a graduate from Yale University Law School. And because he was so bright, he graduated in a 3 years less than what it normally takes to get a law degree from Yale University. And since he was so bright, he got a scholarship for some kind of study in Sorbonne. So he hurried up and learned French so he could take classes in French, because he was just so scholarly, just learned French, university level French. And when he was in Paris studying at the Sorbonne, he was walking along the street and saw one French Canadian devotee. I could say the name, but it wouldn't mean anything to you, but it kind of like an eccentric person, a nice devotee, but eccentric person. And there were three French people crowded around him, blasting him. And if you know French people, that's normal. And he was just very calm, and, you know, so Guru Granth had never seen a devotee before, so he walked up a little close and just listened to what was going on, and he was amazed that this devotee was just so calm and they were so harassing, and then finally they left. So he asked, you know, who are you and what are you doing? And he said, he gave his name and said, I'm with the Hare Krishna temple, and why don't you come to our evening program? So just out of curiosity, went to the evening program. That was that how it started. And he's found a group of other devotees. If I'm not mistaken, Hari Vilas was there at the time also. And because I've shared this kind of dialogue, Hari Vilas had a very different, you know, from his perspective of what was going on, Prabhupada was soon to come. So Guru Granga thought he had something else to do, but he thought he would just, you know, be helpful because everyone was so enthusiastic to do something to prepare for Prabhupada. And within a few days, Prabhupada came. And within, so he was, so, the energy was so enlivening. Now this part of the narration is not so clear, but what I recall is he just stayed in the ashram and in something like a short time. He had been with the devotees for something like 2-3 weeks, maybe it was a month even. And then Prabhupada called for him and said, you're an educated young man, why don't you go start a center in Austria? So off he went to Austria to start a center, Hare Krishna Center, after being around devotees for, you know, 3-4 weeks. And he didn't have any money, didn't have any contacts, he didn't have anything. He just went to Austria to start his center. Didn't have a place to stay, so he was staying in the boiler rooms of big buildings because it was warm. It was a cold winter. That's where he lived, in the boiler rooms. And I'll volunteer that there was a period of time when a group of us doing traveling sankirtan in a few places, we went to college campuses commonly, at least one party, and we went to some places where it was really, really cold, and that was the warmest place that we slept in the boiler rooms of big buildings. And, you know, I don't know what we were thinking. We wanted to save money, so we didn't spend money to get a motel. That was unthinkable, spending money to get a motel room. Forget it. We just, you know, seat of our pants and did what we could do, and so we could distribute more books. But that devotee, Guru Granga, then later became, you know, set up a center in Austria, then went to Geneva, and then he went to Zurich and set a center and became the temple president in Zurich, and had one of the biggest sankirtan parties in the whole world in running out of Zurich temple. And a very amazing devotee. Just with such faith in Srila Prabhupada. So this other, again, I can't remember who it was that said it, but it was they repeated it that it was Brahmananda and Pushta Krishna. They were both, at the time, they were sannyasis. And Prabhupada had sent them to Bangladesh to preach and told them to be very careful. And while they were there, they were sending back reports. And Prabhupada got report that there was a war breakout in Bangladesh. And Prabhupada said, tell them to leave the country immediately. Did I tell this story here? Yes?
Yeah.
Some have heard. It's an amazing story. So they didn't know what that meant, but Prabhupada knew what it meant. And it means something like, you know, what's going on in the Middle East now with this thing with the movie that's against Islam. And so it was Hindu-Muslim tension. So they got on a bus that was heading from Bangladesh back to India. What they didn't know is that there were people standing at the border with guns, and they searched every car or every vehicle that was going bus, and anybody that was not Muslim, that was leaving the country, they took them out of the car, out of the bus, and killed them. Like, just, that was it. Lawlessness. So here are these two sannyasis dressed in saffron, you know, tilak, neck beads, and their japa bag. And the bus came to the border, and the guards came into the bus and saw them, immediately pulled them out of the bus and lined them up against the bus and raised their guns to shoot them. And Pushyakrishna turned to Brahmananda and said, looks like this is it. We better put our hand in our bead bag and chant right now. And, you know, with complete calm, just ready to accept, if that was the case, let us fix our mind upon Krishna. They had such faith in what Prabhupada had said about the chanting of the holy name. And obviously they lived to tell the story. So what happened was the guards saw that they were so calm and peaceful and transcendental. They decided these must be holy men. So they let them go back on the bus and cross the border and come back into India. Just from that. You know, certainly super souls in their heart and said something to them, indicated something. But with just implicit faith in that which was the transcendental teaching that they had received from their spiritual master, whether it was service or their life or whatever it was just give their life. Do their service, whatever it was given somehow by the mystical order of the spiritual master, it would be somehow fulfilled. There's so many things like that. I remember when with Back to Godhead publication, there was a time when Prabhupada always wanted to see that the Back to Godhead publication would increase. So, you know, he would become very happy to hear the book distribution reports, so the devotees would try their best to distribute many Back to Godhead magazines and send a report to Prabhupada. So many Back to Godhead magazines. And so I remember specifically a letter came from Prabhupada. This is very good. You're now distributing whatever the number was, and he made it quadruple. And then he assigned, so Boston so many, and Los Angeles so many, New York so many, Montreal so many, and in this way we'll quadruple our Back to Godhead distribution. We went, how is this possible? Quadruple. And we were already, you know, trying our might to please our spiritual master, and then it was quadruple. And it was always like that. Remember when it was, the Krishna book was first published, and it was a hardback book with, in big letters, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and a big picture of Krishna on the front cover. And we were supposed to distribute these. We were going, how are we supposed to do this? But Prabhupada wants to do it, so there must be a way. And then we heard, at least from my little vantage point, we heard that the devotees in San Francisco figured out a way they would stop to get gas at the gas station and ask the person pumping the gas, can we give you a book instead of paying for the gas? And they said, sure. And so, that was like a way to distribute Krishna books. We used to go, stop and get this. And then we figured, people, they see the book, they don't freak out. And even they don't know, they can't read the Krishna with diacritics in it. And just, slowly, we just gained confidence it was doable, and we started doing it. And then the scores started going, and started going, and started going. And then Prabhupada quadrupled the quantity that we were expected to distribute. To print, and they had to sell the books in order to have the money to print whatever the next book was. It was just mission impossible after mission impossible, and it just kept going like that. And it was always done. And if someone didn't do it, someone else did it, or 10 someone else's did it. And just faith in the instruction of the spiritual master worked like that. So here's Bali Maharaj. With this, the description is, when he saw Vamana coming down the road, it was like seeing another sun rising on the horizon. So brilliant and effulgent. And naturally that captured everyone's attention. And as he approached closer and closer, because he wasn't another son, it was a person. And as he approached closer, it wasn't just a person, it was a little dwarf. It wasn't just a little dwarf, it was a dwarf Brahmin. And because he's the personality of Godhead, Bali just became so attracted. And he thought, let me give him whatever he wants. Because he's a king, he's charitable, he was thinking, whatever he wants. And when Vamana came, he expressed, this is so wonderful, that we're just about to have this wonderful, this yajna, and to make a yajna auspicious, a qualified brahmana being present for the yajna, it will surely be successful. And is the duty of one performing the yajna to offer in charity to the brahmana, so please let me know what is the charity you would like. Oh, just 3 paces of land. He looked at his legs and said, that's not much land. I've got the whole universe. Take a planet or two. No, I'm Brahmana, I don't need much. Three paces of land will be sufficient. Whatever you want. And because he gave his word, he stuck by his word. And one who sticks by their word, even there may be some difficulty in sticking by your word, and look at the difficulty he underwent, he adhered to his word. And that's what he's being praised for by Vamana. So much appreciative. It was on the strength of devotion, not just a righteousness, virtue, kind of a fanaticism thing. But he gave his word to the personality of Godhead, and he kept his word at all difficulty. Tie me up, treat me like an animal, it's okay. I won't depart from my word, my faith in you. And it was deliberate. Because Bali invited. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And then he told them what he thought. Vamana. Just see. Unalloyed devotion. Fixed. Pure devotion. He will not depart from that position of devotion, no matter what difficulty. Prabhupada did like that one time with Giriraj Maharaj. Little appreciation of one another god brother. My first association in the Boston Temple was with Jayadwaita Maharaj and Giriraj Maharaj. They both, mainly it was Giriraj Maharaj that trained me in my service. It was at that time that Prabhupada was starting what he called the World Sankirtan Party, and he wanted one of the strongest devotees from each center to go and join him so he could conduct this world Sankirtan party. And the Boston Temple was small, but they gave two, and Giriraj Maharaj was one of them. And before he left, he was to train somebody in his services, so I was picked to be trained in his services. And one was the Sankirtan leader, and purchasing of flowers and purchasing a boga at the boga market. That's a whole other story. I'll tell another time. And then off he went. And so that was my initial training in Krishna consciousness. And you know what that's like, those of you that have been trained in Krishna consciousness. There's this long-standing appreciation and affection, natural affection. I didn't hear about this till much later, but Giriraj Maharaj's father was fabulously wealthy. And when Giriraj Maharaj went and joined the Hare Krishna movement and then further went off to India, his father wrote him a letter and said, you leave the Hare Krishna movement and I'll give you $1 million. And he wrote back to his father and said, no thanks, Dad, you can keep your $1 million. And Prabhupada was showing this letter to the industrialists, saying, just see. Now some people said, well, why didn't he just say, okay, I'll leave the Hare Krishna movement, take the $1 million and go back and join the Hare Krishna movement? Because he was honest. He wouldn't do that. it would depart, it would be dishonest, depart from the truth. So he's showing, you're chasing the industrialists of Bombay, you're chasing after money, and here's this brahmachari, his father's offering him $1 million just to stop being a devotee. And it's not worth it to him. He wants to be a devotee. Then just recently I heard Prabhupada speaking. I couldn't follow it because he was saying a whole bunch of numbers and it had to do with negotiating a final settlement with the Juhu land, with the owner, Mr. Nair. And the lawyer was the agent for Mr. Nair. And the agent was asking for something more than what Prabhupada had, and he knew it. The agent was asking for more than what Prabhupada had, and the agent knew it. And Prabhupada agreed to a number greater than what he was asking and said, I'll give it. And Prabhupada said on this morning walk, Giriraj Maharaj's father appreciated what I had done. He said, rather than a long extended court battle that who knows how it would come out, take a bad settlement and be done with it. As the business smart father of Giriraj Maharaj. So, tests, obstacles, our entanglements in material existence, not just in this lifetime, but who knows how many lifetimes? Too many lifetimes. Many, many, many lifetimes we've been entangled in something that keeps us bound to the material world and the cycle of birth and death. So when Krishna is very kind, he'll help us cut that entanglement. And when that cut for that entanglement comes, commonly we say, ouch. We don't say, Krishna, thank you very much. I will not depart from your lotus feet. But the glorification of Bali Maharaj is, he didn't say, ouch. He didn't say, why are you doing this? I've surrendered everything to you. Now you're treating me so harshly. And it wasn't a harsh treatment. It wasn't because he was entangled. It was his glorification. And the particular, I'll read the two sentences again. It's very nice. If you're ever, you know, at least one more time during the course of your lifetime you have a difficulty, you can remember this. As described in this verse, hardly anyone could survive such a test. But for the future glorification of Bali Maharaj, one of the Mahajans, the Supreme Personality of God, it not only tested him, that was mercy, but also gave him the strength to tolerate such adversity. Additional mercy. Then he says it again. The Lord is so kind to his devotee. If in case you're not Bali Maharaj, you're just like one of us. That when severely testing him, the Lord gives him the necessary strength at the same time to be tolerant and continue to remain a glorious devotee. So, something like that only. At least one element like that happened. There's some other very different things happened in the life of the sons of Bali Maharaj. So the great grandsons of Prahlad Maharaj. And that's described in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And Bali Maharaj had 100 sons, and the eldest of them was named Bana. And Bana, unlike his father, was very, very proud. He was, like his father, he was very powerful. So powerful that in his worship of Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva asked him to take a benediction. He said he wanted 1,000 arms so he could defeat anybody. So he was given the benediction, 1,000 arms. Kind of awkward, I would think. 1,000 arms. And with those 1,000 arms, he was so eager to serve Lord Shiva that when Lord Shiva was doing his very special dance, he was playing on drums with his 1,000 arms. And that made the dancing of Lord Shiva very, very ecstatic. So Lord Shiva offered him another benediction. And his request was just to have you as my protector. That's all I want. So Lord Shiva remained in the vicinity of Bana to extend his, offer this kind protection to him. And the pastime is described in the 10th canto Bhagavatam. It's also described in Padma Purana, and reference is made of that description in Padma Purana. He had one daughter named Usha, and Usha saw Parvati enjoying with her husband, Lord Shiva. And Usha was, because of the closeness of her father to Lord Shiva, naturally the daughter was also close to Lord Shiva, and she spoke one time to Parvati and said, I wish for that day to come when I will also be able to enjoy as you're enjoying. She said, surely the day will come, don't worry, don't be jealous. He said, but how will I know when that day will come? Don't worry. On such and such day of the moon, you will have a dream, and in that dream, you'll see your future husband, and that person will become your husband. So because Parvati had spoken that way, she became very peaceful. Meanwhile, her father, Bana, was tormented by the fact that he had 1,000 arms and this pride, like the biggest pride you can have. He was trying to find someone who was equal in enemy, and so he could fight and have a chivalrous battle. He couldn't find anyone. He said to Lord Shiva, I sometimes go and just bash on mountains and break the mountains into pieces, thinking, where is that person who I can fight with? Do you know, other than you, I can't think of anyone. Lord Shiva said, your pride will be cut to pieces when one who is greater than me will destroy you. And Bana was such a fool, he thought, great, finally I'm going to find someone I can have combat with. So, one evening, Usha had, exactly as Parvati had said, she had that dream. And in the dream, she saw this most beautiful person. And in her dream, she fell in love with this most beautiful person. And not only it was that night, but it was a recurring dream. And that person kept coming in her dream, and coming in her dream, and woo, woo, woo. Coming in a dream. And then one time, one of those evenings when the beloved person came in her dream, suddenly he disappeared and she called out, oh my beloved, where are you? Where have you gone? And sitting right next to her, your dearmost friend, Chitraleka, heard her. Said, hey, Usha, what's up? going on over there? Oh, did I say something? Yes, you said something. So they were very intimate. The Chitraleka was the daughter of one of the chief ministers of Bana. And so they were in close association throughout their life. So she disclosed everything to Chitraleka. And Chitraleka had some mystic abilities. One of them was she was... Where's Prahlad? She was an artist. But boy, was she an artist. She said, I'm going to draw different pictures of different personalities, and you tell me if this is the person, if that's the person. There were so many persons. I've seen a painting of that. So many, like, persons. And none of them were the persons. But finally, she came up with the one person, because Chitraleka could actually see the persons at a distance and then draw the what she saw. Can you draw a painting of that one, Prahlad? And when she came to Aniruddha, that's it. He's the one. So Chitraleka had another gift. Chitraleka, in addition to seeing people in distant places, she could go to different places and, by mystic power, bring them, even when they were asleep, to wherever she wanted to bring them. She was a mystic. So, in the dead of night, she went to Dwarka by her mystic power, and Krishna's grandson, Aniruddha. Aniruddha is the son of Pradyumna, and Pradyumna is the son of who? Rukmini and Krishna, of their 10 sons, the eldest of their 10 sons. So this is, what's the Chaturvyuha? Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. So he's not an ordinary Prabhu. He's one of the Chaturvyuha, but appearing as the son of Pradyumna, who's also one of the Chaturvyuha of Vasudev and Balarama's son Karshan. So, Chitraleka, while Aniruddha is asleep, brings Aniruddha in the middle of the night right into the, well, we'll say it in our, you know, into the chamber, into the bedroom of Usha. Usha was very surprised, because in Vedic culture, that's a no-no. There's an area of residence where only women are to go. No men are ever to go. And certainly not an unmarried man and an unmarried woman are ever to go. But there was Aniruddha. And she was very happy. And he was very happy. And they began associating with one another. And he just stayed there for 4 months. Let your imagination go for 4 months. They were living like husband and wife, although they weren't married. And some of the attendants of Usha figured it out. There are some signs that she's up to something. So they went and told Bana. And Bana's very clever. He came at the right time, and sure enough, there was Aniruddha in her chamber. He has this big iron club, and in a menacing way, with his 1,000 arms, is going to let Aniruddha have it. Aniruddha quick grabbed a club, and they did intense battle, hundreds and hundreds, because he's not an ordinary personality. Hundreds and hundreds of the army of Bana were destroyed by Aniruddha, but using a certain weapon, a naga something weapon, he tied up Aniruddha. Something like Lakshman was also tied up, and he's not an ordinary Prabhu either. But he was tied up with a weapon and put in prison. So back in Dwarka, they're in big anxiety. Where is Aniruddha? Narada showed up and said, I know where Aniruddha is. You should have asked me. He's in prison. He's in Banasura's prison. Whoa, so the best of the soldiers of the Yadu dynasty with Krishna, with them, came to demand Aniruddha be released from prison. Banasura was very happy. Have battle. And the description is, not only he was present, but also Lord Shiva and Kartikeya were present. Big battle. And Bana was losing. So Lord Shiva, to protect his devotee, released a Shiva Jwara. Intense heat. And Krishna released the Vishnu Jwara. Intense cold. And Vishnu Jwara won. And then Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra and cut off, 998 of his 1,000 arms. Is that right? 998. He left him two arms. And then Lord Shiva came and pleaded directly, please spare him. He's very devoted to me. And please don't take his life. Let him live. On Lord Shiva's plea, Krishna said, not only I'll let him live, but I'll give some benedictions. I can't remember exactly the benedictions, but he'll stay with you for a long, long time, and he will have a long, long life, and you will always be his protector, and he won't be defeated. His pride was removed, not only his 998 arms, and under Lord Shiva's protection, he was freed from that misuse of the great prowess that he had, but instead just simply in the service of Lord Shiva, which was exactly what Lord Shiva wanted, that his pride be eliminated. Krishna doesn't like pride. Lord Shiva doesn't like pride. Any sensible person doesn't like pride. But the tendency is, if one gets some gift from God or some other powerful person as an agent of God, if one's heart is not pure, one will become proud. Oh, one sense is better not to have gifts. But actually, the real thing is better to have a pure heart, whether you have gifts or don't have gifts. And through Krishna's association, he relieved the pride of a number of persons, Bana being one of them, helped him to come to the position of having purity of heart. There's great advantage in even in this line of the daityas, because Narada gave his mercy to Prahlad when Prahlad was still within the womb. Even he was in the Daitya dynasty, he was a great devotee. And similarly, the grandson of Prahlad, Bali Maharaj, seemed to be the enemy of Indra, but he wasn't the enemy of Indra. He was ultimately a great devotee of the personality of Godhead. Tendency can be advantageous or disadvantageous. The real important thing is how you use whatever you whatever it is that you have, and the association that you keep is going to help determine how you use what you have. So Krishna comes, yada yada hi dharma shaglanir bhavati bharata. He personally comes when there is discrepancy in religious principle, religious practice. And otherwise than coming himself, he can send some representative. And on behalf of him, that representative can act in a very powerful way. And I want to just narrate one more nice lila. I was contemplating the schedule. Part of what I did today was the schedule for the Mayapur Yatra. Well, that's even, you know, it's almost as good as going there. And one of the places that I think we're going to go in between Champahati, which is another very wonderful place, and Ambika Kalna, another very wonderful place, is the home of Nakula Brahmachari. And Nakula Brahmachari is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita as an Avesh personality, specifically where Lord Chaitanya entered into his heart. And because Lord Chaitanya had entered into his heart, he behaved in very extraordinary ways. When he would dance like a madman. And he would dance for hours, just in total ecstatic mood. And it would sing like a Gandharva. And he could understand things. He was like omniscient. And one very, very sober devotee named Shivananda Sen heard about these glories of Nakula Brahmachari and thought, I've heard exaggerations before about people, and is he really, Lord Chaitanya has entered his heart? People say like this about him, but is it true? So he decided to go and do a little investigation. So he was thinking to himself as he was approaching Nakula Brahmachari's place, if I stay in the crowd, because wherever he went, he was such an ecstatic devotee, throngs of people would come just to observe him. So I'll stay somewhere in the crowd, and if he understands I'm in the crowd, and then he can identify my mantra, because in addition to the Hare Krishna mantra, there's a mantra, like our Gayatri mantra, that one receives at the time of Gayatri initiation, that is not spoken aloud, so nobody knows. Now, Brahma Gayatri, everybody knows, although it's not supposed to be aloud. It's done aloud all the time. But the other Gayatri mantras, they're not. And so he went in the crowd. And there was a huge, thousands of people. And because Nakula Brahmachari knew exactly what was in the heart of Shivananda Sen, he sent two or four men. Shivananda Sen is somewhere here in this crowd. Find him and bring him here. And Shivananda Sen is his elder. It's like he's amongst all the Vaishnavas. Very elder, very senior, very sober. But still, Nakula Brahmachari is on another plane altogether. So they went through the crowd. Shivananda Sen, identify yourself. You're very fortunate. Nakula Brahmachari wants you to come and see him. They finally found Shivananda Sen, and he came. And immediately, Shivananda Sen, give up your doubts. Here is your mantra. And he spoke his mantra. It's printed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'll let you read Chaitanya Charitamrita to find out. Here is your mantra. And immediately Shivananda Sen understood. He's omniscient. He knew my question and he knew the answer. Lord Chaitanya is within his heart. Then the description says, there's two other incidents that are mentioned. One is when Lord Chaitanya, 1 year, he, instead of the devotees coming from Bengal to come to Puri for Rath Yatra, he sent a messenger saying, tell them this year not to come to Puri for Rath Yatra because I'm going to go to see them. Go quickly because soon they're going to leave. So the messenger went quickly and informed Dvaitacharya that Lord Chaitanya is going to come. So the instruction is, don't come, he'll come. He'll come in the month of whichever the month it is. December, January, whatever that month is. And so they were, while there, Jagatananda Pandit was also there, and Lord Nityananda was also there, and they were all waiting for Lord Chaitanya. And they were waiting. And the month was almost finished. And they were in big anxiety. We didn't go to Puri because he said he was going to come and he hasn't come. Is he going to come? You know what that's like. Like waiting for a bus or something. Or someone's supposed to pick you up and you wonder, did they get in an accident or did they forget? And they don't have their phone on, but I can't call them. What's going on? They don't. Yugayatam Nime Shena Chakshusha Prasayatam. Then they're waiting and waiting, and Nakula Brahmachari came and said, You all look so disturbed. What's wrong? Well, Lord Chaitanya hasn't come. He said, I give you my solemn word, I will bring him here in 3 days. He didn't say he'll arrive here in 3 days. He said, I'll bring him here in 3 days. And he sat down and meditated. And at the end of 2 days, he said, he's in Panihati. In Panihati. We're going to go to Panihati also for the yatra. He said, he'll be here tomorrow. So please bring all the ingredients. I want to prepare nice prasad for him. So he named what he wanted for ingredients, and they brought all the ingredients, and Nakula Brahmachari was a great cook. We have some great cooks, but Nakula Brahmachari was a great cook. And he divided the preparations into three. His Radha Krishna deity, and for Mahaprabhu, and for his Nrisingha deity. And he made three plates and made the offerings and called Lord Chaitanya to come. And Lord Chaitanya came and he ate everything, all three offerings. No one could see, but he came because he called him. And then he became very ecstatic. Lord Chaitanya came and ate everything, but he also became externally very angry. He ate Lord Srinadev's, Jagannath. He said, it's okay, he and Jagannath are the same, but Nrisingha, he'll be hungry. Get more ingredients. I want to cook for Nrisingha. And they didn't know what to do with Nakula Brahmachari. He's this unusual personality here. So they brought other ingredients. And the next year, when all the devotees went to Puri, Lord Chaitanya brought up the fact, please remember, when this cooking was being done, I came and the cooking was so good, I ate everything. But so then they understood. Lord Chaitanya actually came. He actually came. Sometimes Mother Sachi, the same thing. She would make offerings, and in her heart she was offering to her son. And sometimes things would just disappear from the plate, and she'd think, I must be getting old. I was thinking so much about Lord Chaitanya, I didn't put it on the plate, and she'd make another offering and put it on the plate. So Lord Chaitanya sent messengers saying, remember on such and such day, it was a special festival, and Mother Sachi, tell her, I personally came. In fact, I regularly come and accept all of her offerings. So, Krishna can empower one however he likes. He can empower one to be ambitious. He can empower one to create roads in his meditation. The faithfulness of the devotee is the qualification, and the purity is the qualification that will determine what gifts Krishna may give, and then one can use those gifts in Krishna's service. And if Krishna doesn't give some gifts, instead Krishna does like he did with Babi Maharaj, took everything away. That's fine too. Now that's easy in either end to say, oh, that's very nice. Then it's a whole other thing to do. When some great achievement comes, or award comes, or wealth comes, or prosperity comes, or the good times are rolling, and one is thinking, like Sudama was thinking, that Krishna is very kind. And then when the calamity is coming, Krishna is very kind. Think about it. Or when you're in a relationship with someone that's dealing with a great calamity. I'm thinking of some people that are dealing with a great calamity. And then it's just calamity after calamity, and it's hard to stay fixed in that position. But it's Krishna's kindness. If we're looking at the situation where we've been not completing our course of devotional service for this lifetime and the next lifetime and the next lifetime and the next lifetime, Krishna is very kind if he takes away all those false shelters and leaves us with, as he left Bali Maharaj, just with his two lotus feet. Easy to say, and it's another thing to be in that consciousness when those difficult situations come. But the one way or another, the time of death is inevitable for all of us, and at some point there's going to be no shelter other than that one shelter. I shared this afternoon, but on whatever it was, Tuesday was September 11th, so I was at Northeastern University, and I was asked to speak about September 11th, a spiritual perspective. That's a challenging topic. Because you can't tell people, oh, it's just their karma. Any questions? How do you present that to an audience? And in the course of, anyway, the questions weren't, they didn't have rotten tomatoes to throw at me at the end. I thought they would be very challenging. Because the topic is a difficult topic. Very difficult when you try to analyze from a spiritual perspective, why does something like that happen? But because the topic was the topic, and they came in part because of the topic, not because me. They don't know, they're just their college students. The topic was something that concerns them. I mentioned this afternoon, but three people, in the course of speaking about 9/11, when they were younger, they started to cry. Two ladies and one young man. I was 11 when this happened, and she broke apart. Just thinking about what that experience was. And then one person was a Chinese girl with her boyfriend and her microbiology big textbook that thick that she hadn't even opened yet, and it was coming to this class instead of studying her microbiology book. And in the course of hearing how the others were opening their hearts, she said, in a very soft voice, because I had to, so I had to go right next to her to hear what she was saying. I'm regularly feeling pressure. I said, "What do you mean?" She says, "Not regularly, it's all the time." I said, what do you mean pressure?" "Well, I don't know exactly how to describe it, but like not feeling safe, because others were describing their sense of safety just popped, because the false shelters were gone. Like if this could happen, one of the young men said, you know, what's next? I'm not safe. What's next? We're not safe anyway. What to speak of what's next? But the reality, or at least looking at that possibility and realizing it's true, what do I do?" And she was saying, I always feel like that. So I said, "That's good. What's needed is some real shelter." And she went, "Yeah. But, you know, what's that?" That, yeah, that's really a fortunate position to be in. You realize you don't have shelter and you're not safe, you're vulnerable, and I need shelter, and I don't know what it is, but I know I need it. That's a great position to be in. You know, a lot better than what most people are in, thinking, "Look at, I've got all these shelters. I'm perfect, like, you know, perfect, powerful, and happy." The Divine and Maniac chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So we're being prepared because we're devotees. Krishna is kind. He's preparing us for whatever it is, whether it's, you know, crossing the border from Bangladesh back to India at the beginning of the Bangladesh War, or whatever it is, something where our shelters will be taken, and the false ones, and where's your shelter? It's really good. It's fearful because we're lazy and attached to illusory things. When those things are taken, it's good. It's a great opportunity to take real, genuine shelter. Kirtan is a fantastic way to take genuine shelter. So we'll do a little kirtan at the end. See if there's any discussion on this subject. Anything you'd like to add or discuss? Yes?
Question, Maharaj, is like when doubts come, is doubts is also like because of fear?
Yes. Yes. Is that you're asking? Is it that doubts arise because of fear?
Yes.
Well, doubts arise because we don't know what our real shelter is, or we don't know what reality with a capital R is. We don't know. So that's. It's darkness. That's fear. What is darkness? Doubt. There can be degrees of darkness and doubts. Like one is, say, on the lighter side is, I'm not certain. I have an inkling, but I'm not certain. There's hesitation in that case. But, you know, it can be darker. Or, you know, I don't see any light at all. All I see is doubt. And certainly there's fear connected with that. I don't know what's next, like this girl was saying. Thank you. Yes.
Perhaps the topic also deals with the charity. I had this doubt, you know, how the Krishna, as a Krishna conscious followers, what is the best charity for us? You know, think about it. You know, always people say you have to do charity or something. But you know, what is the best way for us?
I think you know, and you're just wanting others to hear. The best charity is the gift of Krishna consciousness, the gift of remembering one's lost relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the best gift. And that which can assist that gift is the best gift. So that, by that I mean, you as a grihastha may not be able to give that gift, that best gift, but you can give something that can assist that. Effort. So where that is taking place, assist that as your charity. And the charity doesn't have to be wealth, although certainly that can be part of what the charity one gives, but it can be your efforts to help that gift of that which awakens Krishna consciousness, that which awakens one's forgotten relationship with the Supreme. That's the greatest gift. And then you can say, well, there may be some things that some persons need in addition to that in order to receive that. So then if we do that, like say the other kinds of charity that are more conventional, there must be one in front. Otherwise, it's not the best charity. It's misplaced.
Class, you were explaining that the position of not of feeling very vulnerable is actually very fortunate, because it's better than thinking I have so many shelters.
Yes.
And I was thinking about Arjuna's example in Gita. You know, Krishna tells him repeatedly fight, or he even explains what is the best kind for yogi, and so many opportunities along the way Arjuna is being told what the answer is, but he doesn't accept it till the 18th chapter. So even in our own case, we have all this information, we have all this assistance, we have all these devotees around, but maybe we're not fully accepting that answer. So how do we move to that position like Arjuna did? What are we not doing right?
Well, maybe you are doing right. It's just we're deeply covered. But he gets it before the 18th chapter, also. But the final, the punchline question, so now what would you like to do? He knows what he would like to do. But the example that Arjuna sets is he continued to ask questions until his doubts were cleared. And when his doubts were cleared, he's ready. But until then, continued association with an inquisitive spirit. Not a blind following spirit, an inquisitive spirit. And in that good association, in case of Krishna, the superlative association, his coverings were cleared. He's ready to go. We're just thinking about your question about the best gift. At our GBC meeting, one of the requirements that we have imposed upon ourselves is the first segment, the first half a day, is BBT, VBT can take that half a day and have the audience of the entire TBC and do with it whatever they want. You know, we inquire from them, what do they want? It was a few years back, but the BBT had come out with a package of all of Prabhupada's recorded material in digital format. So they gave that as a gift to each GBC member. Said, you give us a device, we'll put it on your device. And everyone, you know, they were very happy. And I'm still listening, you know, again and again to that. The gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. Recorded sound vibration. There's a verse, I can't recall which of the Puranas, Agni Purana or something, that if one gives the gift of Srimad Bhagavatam on the full moon night, on a golden something, then one goes back to Godhead. So the gift giver, the charity, the best charity is that which results in your good fortune also, as well as the other person's good fortune. But it's so such a best gift, such a perfect gift. And with it, you can't bring pure love of God into the heart of the person. You know, that's a choice they have to make to say yes, but you can give the opportunity. Best gift. Just become a pure devotee and give Krishna consciousness. That's it. Something else? Yes?
Well, it's like you're saying that Krishna never gives challenge that devotee cannot handle.
Yeah.
So, what I...
You have a different experience?
Means, of course, he gives the capacity, but it's like I am not ready to act on that. So my instinct is that I then try to focus on the problem and then compromise with the sadhana.
Well, that's a choice to make. It's not the preferred one.
How do we get this strength?
Faith. And where do we get faith? Association with those that have faith. Let's take Prabhupada's example. He was given an instruction. And he thought, how can I do this? I'm a householder, etc., etc. But he accepted, but he prepared himself to fulfill that. Rather than say, like what you just said, focus on the problem, like, and then compromise and... He speaks in a humble way that, you know, I was so unfortunate that I didn't take it up right away. But in another sense, preparing himself to take it up properly. And by Krishna's arrangement, when he was ready, that's when the tourist visas thing was permitted. Before then, there wasn't. When he was ready, he was at the same time when tourist visas were made available, so he came on a tourist visa. Yes? Something further?
Yes, ma'am. I'm trying to connect it with the morning question I had with, like, the purity of action. So one of the things you mentioned was that we should be responsible and, because people see us as an example of a devotee.
So, like now this situation where I have, let's say, my work, and it is demanding, and maybe there is some other service which also demands time. So, if I...
Time management question. It's a classic. Keep going.
If I choose to focus on the service, then I may have to do some compromise with work. So is that acceptable? Because then that's probably I might not be very, very responsibly working.
What do you think? Let's go back to the principle that you started your question with. And take that as a given. Now, what do you think? Same answer, I don't know. It's something that's, what you just described is something that we have all experienced, so it's not new territory. And the challenge can be described as time management, but really the challenge is strength of Krishna consciousness. Because with strength of Krishna consciousness, it's not do more of one or less and less of the other, and then the other becomes compromised. And that's not good, so do more of this one and less of that one, and that one gets compromised. The answer that Prabhupada gives is you do both. No compromise. But how to do both? And because I only have so much time, then the answer is just be Krishna conscious, be fully present. Each thing that you do, practice each thing that you do to be fully present. Well, that's where the challenge is, because we like to, you know, be complacent, at least a little bit. A little time wasting here, a little distraction over there, and, you know, then we don't have time. And then we have this dilemma of which one. We're just, you know, we're frivolous and complacent and lazy. The time is there, we're just not present sufficiently. So that's where the, it's on the positive, it's put it really simple. Practice chanting the holy name with great concentration. And the answer to your question is found there. Because then you can be fully present with the chanting of the holy name, you'll be fully present with your academic work and your other devotional activity. And the converse is also true. Not be present properly with your chanting, and everything simple becomes difficult. Everything difficult becomes impossible. It's just how it works. And it can be in a longer period of time, or it can even be day to day, or it can even be, you know, hour by hour. And then, so that's be present with the holy name so that you can be present with each activity and they can get done. And those of us that, like you, have been through that experience know that it's true. They can get done. And the second part is there are times when the wave is even higher, and then it becomes a little bit normal, and then it's a little bit lighter, and then the wave is even higher. And So there's periods of intensity, and when that intensity comes, where does your attention go? You described the attention goes to problem solving, or the intention goes to, you know, one side or the other side, rather than, you know, the problem rather than Krishna consciousness. And the solution is there's, when there's spiritual strength, it's beyond your capacity to do, and that's how it gets done. By an empowerment that's beyond your limited capacity, it can get done. I'm very familiar with that territory, having more to do than there's time to do. So then you take blocks of time. And now when I'm doing this block of time, it's this block of time. I mean, I'm not doing something else. I'm not something else. Problem solving of something, or checking something out on the internet, or and then getting lost, and so much time just passed and I don't know what happened, it just went away, etc. Or worrying. You know, just you do what you're supposed to do. You block of time. Be very, things get accomplished that way. And when, especially when it's time for chanting, that's all you do. You're not doing other things. Giving your undivided attention to Krishna. Something else? Yes. Yeah.
And it also said that false ego is the last thing to dissolve, let go. So what does that mean? Does it mean that we keep carrying all these things that come due to a false identity till we are not able to form a... What does it mean that false ego is the last thing to go? At the same time, we are working on these false shelters and anarthas that are coming up. So, as these are getting minimized.
As these are what?
As these anarthas or pride and fear, all these things are getting minimized, does that mean that the false ego is also dissolving so slowly?
Well, getting reduced in its influence and conversely, the true sense of self is awakening, and there's some you know, between light and dark there's some competition, between ignorance and knowledge there's some competition, and the residual tendency towards ignorance is there, but the residual tendency is checked by Krishna directly, that he describes in Bhagavad Gita. Residual tendency he checks. That address your question?
Which
verse?
11:11.
Gyanadipena basvata. I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. And the commentary explains the residual tendency is being destroyed by Krishna directly. He does it. He steps in and takes it away for one who is faithful, because the precondition is in the first part of the verse. When Krishna sees that, he steps in. Okay. Time for a little more kirtan.